A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about Connecticut. He married into a Storrs family. His father-in-law is Emmett Schneiderman, the rhesus monkey jaw anatomist, which is a sentence I never expected to say on this show, and he's been trying to unpack the DNA of the place. He grew up in Ireland, sees America with fairly neutral eyes, and Connecticut strikes him as contradictory. Quiet and grassy, but bound up with the history of psychiatry.
Storrs absolutely doesn't have an Instagram version. I can confirm that. I grew up there. The most photogenic thing in town is probably the dairy bar.
He wants you, Herman, to draw on growing up there and give him a guide to connecting with the true DNA of the state, not Instagram spots. Storrs doesn't have those anyway.
Storrs has exactly one Instagram spot, and it's the dairy bar ice cream counter. Connecticut isn't liberal or Puritan. It's both, simultaneously, and they don't cancel each other out. They produce each other.
So the tension is the thing.
UConn was founded in 1881 as the Storrs Agricultural School. Charles and Augustus Storrs donated the land, 170 acres and a few barns. Before that, there was nothing there but farms and woods. It's not a postcard New England town with a white steeple and a general store. It's a place defined entirely by its institution. But everything was happening.
Let's start with the Puritan part, because I think that's the piece that confuses people who didn't grow up there. Daniel mentions the alcohol controls. What's the actual history?
When I was a kid, you could walk from the campus dairy bar, which, yes, excellent ice cream, to the edge of the old Mansfield Training School grounds in about 15 minutes. The training school was a state institution for what they then called the feeble-minded. Opened in 1917, closed in 1993. And that walk from ice cream to asylum is Connecticut in a nutshell.
Daniel's prompt circles around a paradox. Tight liquor laws, sex therapists, psychiatric history, innovation. He's asking whether Connecticut is a contradiction or whether the contradiction is the point. You're saying it's the point.
I'm saying the contradiction is the engine. Let me start with the Puritan thread, because everything else grows out of it. Connecticut's Fundamental Orders of 1639, often called the First Written Constitution, created a government rooted in religious discipline.
That's an important distinction. Order versus repression.
The Puritan impulse in Connecticut isn't really about denying pleasure, it's about structuring it. Creating a framework where things happen in their proper time and place. And that framework, paradoxically, creates a kind of freedom within it. And that impulse never really left. It just changed clothes. The blue laws restricted what you could do on Sundays. No travel, no recreation, no buying anything. Those laws stayed on the books in various forms well into the 20th century.
That's the argument anyway. There's a shadow side to that impulse, though, and it's sitting right there in Storrs.
The Mansfield Training School.
Which Daniel would have encountered just by being in the area.
The state sets the prices, the state collects the revenue. That's not modern nanny state liberalism. That's a 17th century Puritan impulse that never died. The government as moral guardian, regulating pleasure because pleasure is suspect. It housed people with developmental disabilities, mental illness, a whole range of conditions that the state decided needed to be managed in a single facility. Right? And yet... The same state that won't let you buy a bottle of bourbon without its permission also produced some of the most radical psychiatric institutions in American history. The Mansfield Training School was part of a wave of progressive institutional psychiatry in the early 20th century. The idea was humane treatment, specialized care, removing people from abusive conditions, and giving them structure and dignity.
So the same impulse that produced orderly Sunday shopping also produced institutionalized abuse.
Right. And that's not a contradiction either. That's the same impulse applied to different populations. For the healthy, the framework is protective. For the vulnerable, the framework was a prison. Same architecture, different door.
What happened to the site?
Investigations found residents living in what amounted to warehouses. 50, 60 people to a ward, almost no programming, staff who'd been there 30 years and had given up. It closed in 1993 after a long legal battle. The grounds sat empty for years. I used to sneak onto them as a teenager, before they put up the fences.
So we've got this moral order, blue laws, state control, the dark side at Mansfield. But Daniel also points out that his friend runs a busy sex therapy practice in the state, and Connecticut has this reputation for progressive thought. Where does that come from?
From the same place, weirdly. Connecticut wrote the first written constitution in North America, the Fundamental Orders of 1639. That's before Massachusetts, before anyone else. That's the whole state. Connecticut takes its moral impulses, control, improvement, discipline, and when they fail, it doesn't mourn them. It repurposes the land and plants something new.
The framework doesn't care what you put in it.
It really doesn't. And Connecticut has this long tradition of taking the structure seriously so that the content can be whatever it needs to be. You see it in the university system. You see it in the medical establishment. You see it in the fact that a place with blue laws until 2012 also has some of the most prominent sex researchers and therapists in the country. It's not that the state is hypocritical. I think the quietness is the connection. Connecticut is small. It's the third smallest state by area. It's dense but not urban in the way New York or Boston are urban. There's a lot of space between things, and that space is quiet and green.
The container is morally neutral.
UConn wasn't a commuter school when I was a kid. People came and they stayed, and the campus was its own world. You'd have physicists and dairy scientists and playwrights all eating at the same terrible dining hall. The quiet isn't emptiness.
So let's talk about the innovation piece. Because Daniel specifically asks how a verdant, quiet place serves as a crucible for that. And Connecticut's track record is genuinely absurd.
It's ridiculous. David Bushnell built the first combat submarine, the Turtle, in 1775. In Connecticut. A wooden submarine with a hand crank. It didn't sink any British ships, but the concept was sound. That's one strand of the helix. The other strand is Yankee ingenuity, the practical, build-it-yourself ethos. Connecticut Yankees were famous for it. They made clocks, they made guns, they made ships.
The submarine and the helicopter. That's two modes of transport that shouldn't exist.
And they both came from a state that looks like a painting of a cow pasture. But that's the thing. The quiet is part of it. Innovation requires focus. It requires long stretches of uninterrupted thought. But it makes sense when you look at the coastline and the rivers. Connecticut has deep water access and a long tradition of shipbuilding. The first American submarine was built in Connecticut during the Revolutionary War, David Bushnell's Turtle.
The land-grant system plays into this, too.
That's the same institutional competence aimed at different targets. Farmers and mechanics. And that ethos. The can-do, practical problem-solving ethos. That's the Yankee ingenuity Daniel's picking up on. It's not theoretical innovation. It's we need a thing that works. Let's build it.
Which connects to the work ethic piece. Daniel mentions admiring the American emphasis on hard work and mobility. That's Connecticut distilled.
They're concentrated in places like West Hartford and New Haven and the shoreline towns. They're liberal in the modern American sense, but they exist inside a state whose legal framework is still shaped by 17th century Puritans. The sex therapist isn't a rebel. She's a product of the same institutional ecosystem that produced the asylum and the university. Connecticut has more therapists per capita than almost any state. It has Yale's psychology department.
So, the verdant landscape isn't a contradiction of the innovation. It's the condition for it.
Right. The quiet is the point. You go to Connecticut to do the work. You don't go there to be seen doing the work. There's a reason the state doesn't produce a lot of celebrities. It produces results.
Let's talk about the psychiatric thread specifically, because Daniel's father-in-law is part of this story. Emmett Schneiderman wrote the authoritative text on Rhesus monkey jaw anatomy. That's a very specific contribution to science, but it fits a pattern.
It's a synthesis that keeps happening over and over in different forms. You don't write the authoritative text on rhesus monkey anatomy by having a flash of insight at a conference. You do it by spending decades measuring and documenting and comparing. It's quiet work. It's disciplined work. And the trick to understanding the place is learning to read the layers. The state liquor store is a fossil from the 1640s. The therapist's office is a fossil from the 1970s.
And Stowe's is bound up with the history of psychiatry more broadly. The university has a major psychology program. But the shadow of Mansfield is also part of that history.
They all just keep existing, stacked up like sedimentary rock. And I think understanding Connecticut means sitting with both things, the research and the abuse, the innovation and the control, the sex therapist and the blue law.
They're not opposites. They're products of the same system.
It's ordered, it's restrained, it's beautiful in a severe way. Stand there and imagine a Sunday in 1650 when you weren't allowed to do anything but pray and sit still. That's the bedrock. The values don't tell you which outcome you're going to get. They just provide the energy.
So if Daniel wants to connect with the real DNA of Connecticut, not the surface, not the dairy bar.
But once you know why it exists, it becomes this incredible artifact. You're standing inside a 350-year-old argument about whether pleasure should be regulated by the government. And the government won.
It's a museum where you can also buy bourbon.
And the bourbon is reasonably priced, I'll give them that. Stop three is the hard one. Go to the UConn campus in stores and find the agricultural research fields on the north side, off Route 44.
I was going to say, what's the guide? He's visiting. He's got family there. He wants to understand the place, not just see it. What does he do?
You just stand at the edge of a field where someone's growing experimental kale and know that underneath you, figuratively and almost literally, is a century of institutional ambition and failure. The asylum was progressive, then it was a nightmare, then it was empty, and now it's kale. That's Connecticut.
The research farm over the asylum. You keep coming back to that image.
Because it's the most honest thing about the state. Connecticut doesn't do memorials, it does repurposing. The old textile mills are now artist lofts and breweries. The armories are event spaces. The asylum is a farm.
That's a heavy recommendation.
It's a heavy place. But Daniel asked for the DNA, not the postcard. After that, go to a package store. Not a big one, a small local one. Talk to the person behind the counter. Ask them how things changed after 2012 when Sunday sales came in. It tastes like a land-grant university's agricultural extension program, which is its own kind of institutional flavor.
Daniel's an Irishman looking at this from the outside. Ireland has its own palimpsest, castles, abbeys, famine roads. Does that give him a lens, or does the American version work differently?
I think it's different in one important way. Ireland's layers are marked. You can visit a ruined abbey, and there's a sign telling you when it was sacked and by whom. Connecticut's layers are unmarked. The training school grounds don't announce themselves. The liquor store doesn't explain its Puritan origins.
That's a different motivation than people assume.
Most people assume blue laws are about morality, and some of them were. But the ones that survived into the modern era survived because they served economic functions. And if you have time, get ice cream at the dairy bar. It really is excellent. Morality was the justification. Stability was the function.
So the system persisted because it worked for the people inside it.
The training school wasn't history to me. It was just the creepy abandoned place where kids dared each other to spend the night. I didn't know about the fundamental orders or the blue laws or the institutional logic. I just knew that the state sold the liquor and the university ran the town and there were a lot of trees.
And now?
Now I think stores is one of the most interesting places in America, precisely because it doesn't announce itself. It doesn't perform its history. It just keeps going, building the next thing over the last thing, and if you're not paying attention, you'll drive through and see nothing but grass and a few university buildings. But if you know what to look for, the whole history of the American experiment is right there, compressed into a few square miles.
The submarine, the helicopter, the insurance policy.
The insurance policy isn't as exciting as the submarine, but it's arguably more influential. Connecticut invented modern insurance. The first fire insurance company in America was founded in Connecticut. It's the wrong question because it assumes a place has to be one thing. Connecticut is both, and neither, and the tension between them is what makes it productive. The Puritans built a society organized around restraint.
That's a through line. From blue laws to actuarial tables.
But inside those containers, extraordinary things happen. Research, therapy, submarines, ice cream. The container constrains, and the constraint generates energy, and the energy produces innovation. That's the double helix. The insurance industry is what happens when it meets commerce. Same brain, different outcomes.
Daniel's father-in-law is a scientist. His friend is a sex therapist. He's an Irishman trying to make sense of a place that seems to contain multitudes. What's the one thing he should understand that most outsiders miss?
The question is whether you can read the layers. Connecticut happens to be unusually legible once you know the key, because it's small and the layers are close to the surface. You can drive from the fundamental orders to the submarine yard in an hour.
And the verdant quietness Daniel noticed. That's not a backdrop. It's part of the mechanism.
It's essential. The green isn't decorative. It's the space between the institutions. It's what lets the ideas breathe. Connecticut is dense with ideas, but physically spread out, and that combination, intensity without crowding, is rare.
And Stores is where you can see both strands most clearly.
Stores is the microcosm. You've got the land-grant university, the ultimate expression of Yankee practicality. You've got Mansfield, the ultimate expression of Puritan order gone wrong. And you've got this quiet green landscape that holds both of them without comment. The landscape doesn't judge, it just contains.
That's very Connecticut. The landscape doesn't judge.
The landscape absolutely doesn't judge. It just grows grass over everything and waits.
What was it like?
And get ice cream at the dairy bar. I'm serious about that. It's part of it. The dairy bar is the land-grant mission in edible form. The agriculture school makes cheese there, too. It's excellent cheese.
You're very committed to the dairy bar.
By the late 80s, it was already under investigation, wasn't it?
Let me push on something. You said the tension is productive, but Mansfield suggests the tension can also be destructive. How do you know which one you're getting?
You don't in advance. That's the risk. The same discipline that produces a Sikorsky helicopter can produce an institution that abuses disabled people. The values don't self-correct. They need external checks. Mansfield changed because of litigation, because of journalism, because of advocacy. The system didn't fix itself. It had to be forced.
What did you actually do on a night shift?
No framework is. The Connecticut model works when there's accountability. It fails when there isn't. The blue laws persisted because they had a constituency. Mansfield persisted because its victims didn't. You said the grounds are a research farm now.
The same privacy that lets you think also lets you hide.
That's it exactly. The quiet that enables innovation also enables abuse. The verdant landscape that provides a laboratory also provides cover. Daniel's right to notice the contradiction, but the answer isn't to resolve it. The answer is to see it clearly.
What do you think happens to this DNA as Connecticut changes? UConn is expanding. The state is diversifying. Sunday sales are legal now. Does the tension survive?
I used to walk those grounds when the buildings were still standing but empty. This would have been the early 90s, right around when it closed. The silence was the thing. You'd expect an abandoned institution to be noisy somehow, creaking, wind, animals. But it was just completely still, like the buildings were holding their breath.
That's a choice, not a destiny.
It's a choice every generation has to make. And I think Daniel, coming from Ireland with fresh eyes, is actually in a perfect position to see it. He doesn't have the natives' blind spots. He notices the package stores and the sex therapists and the psychiatric history and thinks, these don't fit together. But they do. They just don't fit together neatly.
That image, the research farm over the asylum, stays with me. Let's sit with that.
I keep thinking about the soil. The training school had its own farm program for decades. The residents worked the land, grew vegetables, raised livestock. It was supposed to be therapeutic. So the ground had already been farmed by the institution before UConn ever put research crops there. The same dirt, the same purpose, just a different set of hands.
That's the palimpsest again. The farm under the farm. The institution under the institution.
I worked at a package store in Hartford, 1993-94. Summer job between other things.
The training school was progressive once. It was the innovation. And then it became the thing that had to be torn down and planted over.
State-run store on Farmington Avenue. We had a binder at the counter with the price list. The state set the prices. You couldn't discount anything. If a bottle of whiskey was $14.95, it was $14.95. No sales, no specials, no nothing.
The helix keeps turning.
The door was locked. They pull the handle, look confused, read the hours sign, walk away. Happened every Sunday. Tourists, mostly. Locals knew.
Did anyone ever get angry?
One guy, from Massachusetts. Banged on the glass for about 30 seconds. I just pointed at the sign. He left.
The system worked.
The system was inefficient in ways you wouldn't believe. We'd get shipments on Tuesdays. The truck would come from the state warehouse in Hartford. The driver had a clipboard with three copies of everything. I had to sign all three. One for him, one for us, one for the state. Nobody ever looked at the third copy. I asked my manager once. He said it goes to a file room in the basement of some state building and sits there until someone throws it out.
That's the Puritan order in its purest form. A triplicate form where the third copy serves no function except to exist.
We had a regular customer. Older woman, came in every Friday at 4, bought one bottle of sherry, same brand, same size, every week for the 2 years I worked there. One Friday she came in, and the price had gone up 30 cents. She noticed. She asked why. I said the state raised it, she said, and I remember this exactly. Well, I suppose they have their reasons. And she paid it.
I suppose they have their reasons. That's the whole state motto right there.
It was a job.
The deference to structure.
The deference to structure, and also the assumption that there probably is a reason, even if you don't know it. That's not nothing. In a lot of places, a 30-cent price increase with no explanation would start an argument. In Connecticut, it starts a shrug.
You mentioned the Mansfield site earlier. The land got redeveloped. Hilbert, do you know what happened to it?
Some of it's UConn now. Tech park, research buildings. Some of it's still empty. There was a whole thing about what to do with the cemetery.
The cemetery.
The training school had its own cemetery. Residents who died there, some of them were buried on the grounds. The graves weren't all marked properly. When they closed the place, there was a question about what to do with it. You can't just build over a cemetery, but you also can't move the graves without, you know, finding them first.
How did they resolve that?
They didn't, really. Part of the site is just set aside. Fenced off. You can't build there. You can't do much of anything. So there's this patch of land in the middle of all the redevelopment that just sits there. Quiet. Green.
That's almost too on the nose.
It's not a metaphor. It's just a cemetery with bad records. But yeah, it sort of is.
The landscape doesn't judge. It just grows grass over everything.
That's what grass does.
Hilbert, when you were working at that package store, did you have any sense that the whole system was about to change? Sunday sales came in 2012. That's not that long after.
Nobody thought it'd ever change. The package store owners didn't want it to change. The state liked the revenue structure. The churches liked the quiet Sundays. There was no constituency for change except the customers, and the customers weren't organized.
So what broke it?
The recession. 2008-2009. State budget was a disaster. Somebody in Hartford did the math and realized Sunday sales would bring in something like $5 or $6 million a year in new revenue. That was it. A budget line item.
Pragmatism dressed as principle.
I don't even know if they bothered with the principle part. They just needed the money. The package store owners fought it for a few years, but once the state decided it was happening, it was happening. Connecticut doesn't move fast, but when it moves, it's because the math changed.
And now Sunday sales are just normal.
Now they're normal. The same people who said to destroy the industry are still in business. The world didn't end. Connecticut absorbed the change and kept going. That's what it does.
The structure adapts. The container holds.
The container holds until it doesn't. Mansfield held for 75 years. The Blue Laws held for 350. Different containers, different timelines. But they all break eventually.
That's a cheery note.
It's not cheery or not cheery. It's just what happened. The records are there if you want to check.
I believe you. I'm just thinking about that cemetery, the one with the bad records.
Yeah, that one's not going anywhere.
I think that's the open question, actually. Daniel's trying to understand Connecticut's DNA, and what we've described is this productive tension between order and freedom. But the Mansfield Cemetery is still there. The tension doesn't resolve. It just accumulates, layer on layer. Can other places learn from that? Or is Connecticut too idiosyncratic?
I think the pattern is exportable, but the specific forms aren't. Every place has its own version of the tension between order and freedom. Connecticut's version is particularly visible because the Puritan roots are so deep and the Yankee innovation is so concrete. But the dynamic, structure enabling or constraining creativity, discipline producing both submarines and prisons, that's universal. The question is whether a place is honest about it.
Honest about the shadow.
Honest about the shadow. Connecticut isn't always honest. The green landscape makes it easy to forget what's buried. But the records are there, as Hilbert says. The cemetery is there. You just have to know to look.
So, Daniel's guide, final version, walk the Mansfield grounds, talk to a package store owner, visit the empty campus, understand that the contradictions are the engine, and remember that the grass is growing over things you can't see.
And get the ice cream.
And get the ice cream. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the records, all three copies.
If you want to send Daniel your own guide to Connecticut or ask us to decode your hometown's DNA, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.